Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Uni-Select Inc.'s 2022 first quarter results conference call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. Note that today's call is being recorded. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, et bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique sur les résultats du premier trimestre 2022 de Uni-Select Inc. En ce moment, toutes les lignes sont en mode écoute seulement. Après la présentation, nous procéderons à une séance de questions et réponses. Si, à tout moment, vous avez besoin d'une assistance immédiate, veuillez appuyer sur étoile 0 pour obtenir l'opérateur. L'appel d'aujourd'hui est enregistré. Je voudrais maintenant passer la conférence à Max Rogan, chef de la direction Affaires juridiques et secrétaire corporatif. I would like to turn the conference over to Max Rogan, Chief Legal Officer and Corporate Secretary. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Uni-Select's first quarter conference call. Presenting this morning are Brian McManus, Executive Chair and CEO of Uni-Select, and Anthony Pagano, Chief Financial Officer. Following their comments, we will open the call for questions. Please note that all documents referred to in today's conference call, including this webcast presentation, can be found on our website at uniselect.com in the Investors section. As noted on slide 2, I would like to remind you about the caution regarding forward-looking statements, which applies to our presentation and comments. All amounts are expressed in U.S. dollars, except as otherwise specified. With that, let me turn the call over to Brian.
Thank you, Max. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our first quarter results conference call. Please turn to slide 4 for the key highlights of the first quarter. We are pleased with our first quarter performance. We had a strong start to the year with sales increasing as market tailwinds improved demand and we saw price increases above historical levels. We also benefited from the operational improvements implemented by our team over the past several quarters and favorable timing and reconciliation of vendor rebates. Turning to our results, consolidated sales for the first quarter were up 11% to $410 million from $370 million last year, primarily attributable to organic growth of 11.6%. In turn, adjusted EBITDA increased over 50% to $45 million, or a margin of 11%, compared to $30 million, or a margin of 8.1% last year, representing an increase of 290 basis points. This performance was largely driven by higher sales, additional vendor rebates in all segments, and a streamlined cost structure. These factors were partially offset by higher operating expenses related to inflationary fuel and energy costs, as well as the cost impact of a fully operational business. As a result of higher adjusted EBITDA and significantly lower financing expenses, our diluted adjusted net earnings per share reached 43 cents per share versus 12 cents per share last year. While our first quarter performance was very strong, we caution that the magnitude of improvement will likely be greater in the first half of the year due to the timing of certain rebates and as we begin to lap operational improvements implemented in the back half of 2021. Furthermore, although we do expect to leverage further operational and market opportunities going forward, including potential strategic acquisition opportunities, we still need to contend with ongoing supply chain challenges, labor issues, and inflationary pressures. I will now turn the call over to Anthony to complete the financial review. Anthony?
Thank you, Brian. I will direct participants to page 6. Before I discuss the results from our three segments, I would like to touch upon two one-time items that negatively impacted EBITDA by about $12 million in the first quarter, both of which have been excluded from the calculation of adjusted EBITDA. The first relates to inventory obsolescence. As you recall, in Q2 of last year, we took a large charge associated with the change in inventory provision assumptions at our FinishMaster segment. During Q1 of this year, we conducted similar work regarding our inventory provision methodologies at CAG and their underlying assumptions. As a result of this, a one-time obsolescence expense of $10.9 million was recognized in the quarter. We also recognized a $1.2 million expense for various items, including restructuring charges relating to the rebranding of GSF and other special items. Having taken these two charges in Q1, We anticipate that the bulk of one-time charges for 2022 have been completed. Turning now to page 7 for FinishMaster. Both sales and organic growth increased 9.2% to $173 million, driven by a general recovery in the market and the effect of price increases. Adjusted EBITDA also continued to improve, reaching $19.6 million, or a margin of 11.3%, compared to $10.1 million, or a margin of 6.4% for the same period last year. This significant improvement was primarily driven by additional sales volume and rebates, as well as an optimized cost structure, which is testament to operational initiatives taking hold. Our focus remains on ramping up sales, optimizing our path to market, and further leveraging technology to develop our operating model. Turning to page 8 for the Canadian Automotive Group, sales reached $130 million, up 12.7% from $115 million last year, mainly attributable to strong organic growth driven by increased demand and price increases. We have been pleased by our ability to grow sales despite continued supply chain constraints across certain product categories. Adjusted EBITDA reached $17.2 million, or a margin of 13.2%, up from $12 million, or a margin of 10.5% for the same period last year. This increase is mainly due to improved demand, additional vendor rebates, price increases, and product mix. Note that during the first quarter, we completed the acquisition of 3 stores from one of our members in Quebec. Turning to page 9 for GSF. Sales reached $107 million, an increase of 10.7% from $97 million for the same period last year. This growth was mainly attributable to organic growth of 14.8%, driven by demand and price increases, and partially offset by the negative effect of currency conversion. Adjusted EBITDA reached $10.9 million, or a margin of 10.2%, up from $10 million, or a margin of 10.3% last year. This growth is due to additional sales volume, higher vendor rebates, and an optimized cost structure. It was partially offset by government subsidies recorded in 2021, and higher operating expenses relating to inflationary fuel and energy costs, as well as a growing network of stores. In the quarter, we opened 2 greenfield stores, and we expect to invest in additional openings in 2022 in line with our growth strategy. In summary, we are pleased with the operational results across all 3 of our businesses and are encouraged by the growing list of opportunities for ongoing improvement and sales initiatives that will be executed going forward. Turning to page 11 for comments relating to our cash flow. We generated $8 million of cash flow from operations in the first quarter, compared to a small cash outflow in the same period last year. This variance is primarily attributable to increased profitability and lower interest payments, given our amended credit facility. It was partially offset by higher working capital investments due to typical seasonality and additional inventory purchases to mitigate supply chain delays. After accounting for net investments in merchant advances, as well as capital investments, we generated free cash flow of $2 million in the first quarter, up from outflows of $6 million for the same period last year. This is primarily driven by higher cash flow from operations combined with higher CapEx, including the opening of stores at GSF and software development to support productivity and sales initiatives. Note that customer investments were lower than the same period last year due to timing. Turning to our financial position on page 12. At the end of Q1, our total net debt stood at $327 million, including $104 million of IFRS 16 lease obligations related to buildings. This represents an increase of $18 million versus $309 million at the end of the fourth quarter. Although our total net debt was higher, our leverage ratio decreased further to 2x at the end of Q1 from 2.1x at the end of last year, driven by our higher adjusted EBITDA. This leverage represents the lowest since the acquisition of GSF in 2017. In addition, at the end of the quarter, we had $174 million of available liquidity, subject to compliance with financial covenants. We continue to be highly focused on driving asset utilization, including working capital, in order to drive stronger returns for our shareholders. I will now turn the call over to Brian for concluding remarks. Brian?
Thank you, Anthony. Please turn to slide 14. Our views on 2022 have not changed since last quarter. Based on what we currently see, we still expect modest improvement in sales and higher adjusted EBITDA and diluted adjusted net earnings per share in 2022 compared to 2021. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, the magnitude of improvement will be greater in the first half of the year due to the timing of certain rebates and as we begin to lap certain operational improvements implemented in the back half of 2021. Having said this, we remain cautiously optimistic about 2022 as we face ongoing headwinds with regards to our supply chain and labor. We expect continued challenges with fill rates, inflationary pressures on labor, and labor availability. While our team continues to do a great job managing through these, we expect it will become increasingly challenging going forward. Our priorities for 2022 will be to continue to focus on organic growth and drive operational improvements across each business unit. Making use of our improved balance sheet, we intend to reinvest in the business through increased CapEx and customer investments and begin to consider strategic acquisition opportunities to further expand and consolidate our market position. To conclude, we are well positioned to drive the business to the next level given the global market recovery, our healthy balance sheet, and the dedication of our team. This concludes our presentation. We are now ready to answer any questions. Operator?
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press star two. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Norman Sadi with Laurentian Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So my first question is more on the timings of vendor rebate. I think you guys benefited in the last quarter from that and this quarter as well. How should we expect that in the second half? Because in your outlook comments as well, it appears that the first half would be better than the second half. Is that the right way to think?
Hey, Norman, I think the best way for you to think about this as you consider the balance of the year, and similar to what I mentioned in the last quarter, is to look at the last 12 months or rolling 12 months on average, and that should get you to about the right place as we consider the full year 2022.
Okay, that's fair. And I think in your prepared remarks, and you mentioned that the focus is on sales increases. So some of that is natural sort of recovery from COVID, but is there anything else that you guys are doing to increase sales? Any new initiatives, or it's just you're just benefiting from the natural volume rebound?
Naturally, we're focused on driving sales in all of our divisions. I think the prepared remarks I was referring directly to FinishMaster, if I recall correctly. I think we do expect to benefit somewhat from a recovery in the market, but we have implemented a variety of initiatives, both in terms of sort of our team and incentivizing them. That's kind of what I had in mind.
Okay. And do you see any changes in the customer mix, like getting some customers because of these ongoing probably supply chain challenges, and once things normalize, they can probably go back to different suppliers, or has anything changed in that within the customer mix recently?
It's Brian speaking. Not so much from the client mix. I think on the supplier side, we are looking to other suppliers to help fill where we may have shortages, but on the customer mix, for the most part, it would be similar. There has been opportunities where we're able to fill in for a competitor that may not have what a particular customer is looking for, but I would say it probably goes the other way sometimes for us. So in general, it's fairly stable.
Okay, fair enough. And just one last one from me. I think you guys were also benefiting a little bit from the change in product mix from private labels. Was that something in the first quarter as well?
Yes, it's something we continue to focus on. We've made progress.
Okay, thanks for taking my question, and congrats on a good quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Ocampo with Cormac Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Hi, David. Good morning.
I just wanted to circle back quickly on the private label stuff. I know the supply chain issues has tilted the mix a little bit more towards private label, but as we begin to normalize maybe in the back half of the year, maybe even 2023, do you think that mix shifts back, or just curious how sticky your private label business is? I mean, do the customers just shift back in a normal environment?
Look, it's hard to predict with 100% the future, but I think what we are seeing is a fairly good uptake by our clients. There seems to be some stickiness to it. I think they're seeing the value in it, and part of also the increase in private brands is just the categories of products that we're also carrying it in. So we've expanded beyond just certain categories, so the mix has increased as well.
Right. No, that's helpful. And Anthony, I don't know if you can comment on this, but I mean, it's pretty good organic growth across the board in all three of your divisions. I was wondering if you could break that down, if you can, between volumes and price increases. Is it more tilt towards price increases versus volumes?
Yeah, that's fair. I think it would be a bit more tilted towards price increases than volumes.
And obviously, as you can understand, we're not going to break that down for competitive reasons.
Yeah, no, completely understand that. And then last one for me on the M&A environment. Is there one particular area where you see more opportunity? And, you know, just given all the volatility that we're seeing in the marketplace with multiples coming down, is there, you know, less willingness to sell in the current environment?
I think the best way I can answer that is just to say we're keeping our eyes and ears open in all the business units. And, you know, we'll see what lies ahead, but, you know, we're confident that this year we will hopefully be able to see a couple of acquisitions.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jonathan Lemers with BMO Capital Market. Please go ahead.
Hey, Jonathan.
Morning.
Hi, Jonathan.
Maybe picking up on that last question, Ryan, could you give us a little bit more color as to how the acquisition pipeline has trended versus the Q4 report in February?
Not really. I would say that it's still, you know, there's still a pipeline, Jonathan, and, you know, we're actively discussing with various parties out there, but that's about as much as I'll say.
Okay. Now, Anthony, I know you said that you can't break down the organic comp, but just on FinishMaster, the paint suppliers did see a real step up in their refinish volume trend from Q4 to Q1. We didn't really see that with FinishMaster this quarter, as far as I can tell. Are the results we're seeing from the paint suppliers just a lag? Does FinishMaster already benefit for?
I think there's, you know, I can't comment on the results of our suppliers and we won't. But you know, I think the one thing I would say is there's naturally some differences in timing around when we buy, when our competitors would buy, you know, behavior is influenced actually by price increases from suppliers, because their customers will know to some degree in advance of their price increases coming in, so that tends to drive some volumes. It's certainly something we look at and we consider, but very difficult to deconstruct.
Okay, that's fair. On paint inflation, is there anything to help us with in terms of timing of when there might be another round of price increases passed through?
No, we don't have visibility on that. Those things typically come to the market at in one go, Jonathan. So we can't speculate on when the timing of future price increases may or may not happen.
Okay, and just last question on the auto parts divisions. Has the parts supply availability gotten worse in recent months?
I would say it hasn't gotten worse, but it also hasn't improved very much. I continue to be very pleased with the work of our team to mitigate around it. But I would say it's pretty much in the same position as we would have been last quarter.
And just on that, would you say there was any material abnormal benefit from inflation to the earnings this quarter that we should be thinking about as we model forward?
There will be a certain amount of benefit. I don't think I would call it material or abnormal, though.
Your comments.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Daryl Young with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys, and congrats on a great quarter.
Morning, Daryl.
Thanks. Sticking out the inflation theme, but maybe coming at it a slightly different way, we're starting to hear some folks talking about potential for a deflationary environment 12 months out. Is that something that's on your horizon at all at this point, or is it still trying to catch up with the current inflationary environment, but maybe just any comments you might have on that longer-term call to threat?
Yeah, it's really hard to comment on it, especially in the position we are now where we're not getting the supply that's coming in. So it's I guess from our standpoint, it's a little hard to imagine a deflationary scenario right now. So probably premature to have any comments on that.
And if that were to unravel, would that be margin destructive, I guess would be the way to put it, or are there ways to mitigate that in the future?
There'll certainly be ways to mitigate it. I think one of the ways we're already mitigating it, which is part of the reason we don't necessarily see the gains from inflation or as much as you would expect if we had a larger inventory, is really we continue to be very focused on working capital. So as we increase our turns of inventory, it reduces your exposure to either upward or downward price movements.
Right, got it. Yeah, sorry, I know that was a bit of a wild card question. and then just on the auto parts side, thinking through, vehicle pricing, lack of new car inventory, is there any way to kind of quantify how long this could impact you and how much of a benefit you see this being over the next 12, 24 months?
Very difficult. I mean, I'd like to think it does create a tailwind for us in that, the people will be hanging on to their cars longer, probably, investing into them, especially when you see the price of the used cars in general, that, there's an incentive to continue to keep it in good shape. But beyond that, very difficult to predict.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks for humoring me, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Zachary Evershed with National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Congrats on the quarter.
Thanks, Zach.
So as paint manufacturers do raise prices, do you see any lag in raising your own prices that might weigh on margins, or can you pass that through seamlessly?
It's I think as we've discussed a few times here, Zach, the majority of our pricing to our customers is based off a sort of a manufacturer published rate. It's called jobber in industry jargon. So as the paint manufacturer increases their prices, the jobber rate goes up, and our pricing through to our consumer follows concurrently or immediately. So to answer your question more briefly, there will not be a lag.
Great, thank you. And then are you comfortable with your inventory levels given the current environment?
I think, you know, as I've said in the prepared remarks, we're really focused on driving asset utilization. Naturally, being in a position where we don't want to be in a position where we need to take an inventory write down again. The inventory, the working capital ticked up here in Q1. We had mentioned that to the community. It's something we expected. It's been very, very planned out, a very thoughtful exercise on our side to really build out safety stocks to insulate ourselves over any potential issues with supplier fill rates. And I suspect as the situation stabilizes that we would be able to continue down our path of optimizing inventory.
That's helpful. Thanks. And then on M&A, what's the range of sizes you're evaluating?
I think the best answer I can give to that, or the only answer I'll provide you, is various sizes.
Gotcha. Thanks. And last one for me, and sorry to beat a dead horse here, but just to clarify, do you think the current pace of vendor rebates is sustainable, or is it more of a temporary restocking tailwind given the safety stock you built?
As I mentioned on the first question, Zach, what I would guide you towards is to look at the last 12 months, and that should be a reasonable proxy for the full year.
All right, thanks. I'll turn it over.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Kyrgios with Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Congrats on the great quarter.
Thank you, Michael.
My first question would be, when it comes, we see numbers in Europe, GDP numbers come down lately. What do you really see with your exposure and the current environment, that there's a bit more consumers are holding tight their money?
I would say, you know, through the first quarter, We didn't see much of it. I would say it's something we certainly are aware of, but the team in the UK is you know, still doing a good job of maintaining and trying to grow market share. We've also opened some greenfield branches over there that's, you know, further expanding our reach into areas we weren't before. So, you know, that combined will hopefully mitigate any softer demand in the market.
Perfect. Thank you. And just a quick second one on have you seen any changes in the labor issues more in North America, or is it still the same as last quarter?
Very similar to last quarter. It's, you know, we're working through it and we're managing, but it's still a tough labor market for sure.
Perfect. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Mr. McManus, you may proceed.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We look forward to updating you on our progress during our next quarterly call. Also, please join us for our virtual AGM today at 1:30 p.m. Details can be found on our website. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a great day.